covered that side of the equation on Sunday, so I'm covering the other side. So there will be a few of the passages that he brought out that I will also. So oftentimes the Bible gives its opposites in order to, you know, define terms very well. So we'll jump right into it here. Proverbs 6, and this is probably one of the most well-known proverbs regarding the sluggard. And it's, here begins in verse 6, and we'll read from 6 to 11. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall your poverty come on you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. So we're talking about ants here, and we're supposed to learn something from ants. That's what Solomon is telling us. So what is the word that is typically used for creatures, not mankind, but creatures that God has created that have an innate ability to know what to do? Like spiders building a spider web would be an example. What is that word?
Instinct.
That's correct. So ants, you never see ants just laying around sunning themselves, or at least I haven't. If you ever see one, they're always going somewhere. They're always doing something. They're always active in their pursuits. But on the other hand, for us, we have certain instincts. We are born with instincts. We have an appetite for food, et cetera. We can name a whole lot of things we have instincts for. But what is the thing that's often contrasted with animals and man that relate to our ability to learn? And it starts with an R. I know what I'm thinking. I know you don't know what I'm thinking. So can anybody get what? I'll just tell you, because that was a very sloppy question. So I'll forgive you for not knowing it. Reason. Okay. Our ability to reason is in contrast to animals' innate or instinctive abilities. So we have the ability to reason through things and learn, of course, through reason, through our parents, through other teachers, etc. So we are told to look at the ant if you're a sluggard and learn something from the ant, in that the ant, even something so small and seemingly insignificant on earth, we can learn from them, even though we may step on a whole colony of them and not know it. We probably step on them all the time if we're walking through the woods or something. So they seem to be very significant, but yet they have something to teach us. But most of us, of course, in our culture, are not farmers. And Philip mentioned this. We're not in as much as an agricultural civilization as they were at that time, but it's really not talking exclusively about gathering, you know, sowing in the spring and tending your crops and harvesting at the end of the season, so that you can have something, you know, provide something. That's part of the picture here. But since we're not all farmers, professionally at least, then there's something else here as well. And the basic principle, of course, is taught here, is more universal than that. And that is that if we're lazy and we don't work, then we will eventually run out of resources. That's the overall lesson here. Is if we're just refuse to work, we will eventually run out of resources. And, you know, I don't want to dwell on this, but paying people not to work is not a good idea. It's not wise. Because what's happening in our, this is kind of an expansion of this principle. What's happening in our country right now is if people are being paid not to work, then it is creating a disconnect between work and income. If there's a connection between work and income, if you work for a certain amount of income, then that's a healthy thing to understand, and a principle that should be consistent in our everyday lives. But if you are receiving an income without having to work and you're capable of working, it is setting up a bad habit for many people in our country. It's setting up an income without the connection to work. And I don't think that's healthy. And it should not go on. But they didn't ask me. So anyway, I'm just telling you that's what I think about it. I'm not the first one, of course, to notice that there are things. I can give you a brief example. I ordered a large roll of linen canvas for a painting about 3 months ago, and I was following up on it about 2 weeks ago because there was no word about it, and the lady from the art supply store told me that it was sitting in a shipping container in Charleston, and they were unable to get it because the truckers and supply chain, ever how it works, I don't know all the ins and outs of that, but it's sitting there in a shipping crate in Charleston, in the port, and it can't get here. I'm not the only one that has noticed that there are, at some point, you see, there's going to be consequences to people not working. And I'm experiencing one of those consequences, and probably I'm sure other people are as well. So individuals need to go to the ant, and countries sometimes need to go to the ant, because the same thing that happens to individuals can also happen to a country, because the country is composed of individuals. A country is a collection of individuals. And any comments about anything that I've said so far?
It's interesting, yeah. Verse 7, it says, speaking of the ant, it says, having no chief officer or ruler.
Right.
Some people will only work when they have somebody supervising them to do it, watching over them.
Right.
If they see the boss man come, and they'll go to work. But
yeah,
we shouldn't be that way.
No.
We should be diligent all the time, whether we're the boss or whether we've got someone over us. If we've got work to do, we need to be about doing it.
Right. Yes. Back in the days when I was, you remind me of something, personal experience. And back in the days when I was working for Statesville Stained Glass and actually had the studio in the company there, Bill Laws at that time, who was the president of the company, if people found out that he was gone, this was not me. I was taught a good work ethic from my parents. And not saying that I was always was perfect at this. However, most of the time, I was pretty good. You know, I was. But anyway, I'm not talking about me. what I recall seeing was that if people found out that Bill, the boss, was gone, my loft was in this warehouse, was up above everybody else's. It was in a corner of the building. And I could look out over the building, and there's all these tables of people who are cutting glass and letting glass and at various stages of putting together stained glass. And they'd all be sitting on their tables smoking cigs and lollygagging around, not for when the you know, there was a break in the morning and there was a break in the afternoon, 15-minute break. Well, that 15-minute break ended up being a 30-minute break for most of them. They were just sitting around down there talking. Why? Because the boss was away and the children were playing. You know, they were not being responsible. And so exactly what you said, Earl, is it, the Bible in the New Testament calls that a man pleaser, men pleasers, that are simply, if someone's watching them, then they're working hard or appear to be working hard, and at other times they're not. And my children have noted to me, well, I remember when Sadie was working at Ingalls, and Sadie's a very diligent worker, but she said that there were a lot of these teenagers would just disappear into the bathroom at Ingalls for, you know, long periods of time, and nobody would see them. Nobody would know where they were. And that was just like commonplace at Ingalls. And I don't know, you know, I don't know how big companies like that manage to just keep going with such slack employees. But it, you know, it happens all the time. And so anyway, lot more could be said about that. We have many good examples in the Bible of people who were diligent. I'll just ask, is anybody, who comes to your mind as it relates to the Old Testament? Is there somebody that in the Old Testament that comes to your mind as someone who was not a sluggard but was very diligent?
Ruth.
Oh, that's right, Ruth. Yep.
Noah, or we wouldn't be talking.
Noah.
Or we wouldn't be talking.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Noah. The first one I thought about was Joseph. You know, Joseph was a long ways away from home, long ways away from his parents, in a strange land, and he was working for Potiphar, and he did such a good job at it. You know, he was promoted in Potiphar's house until Potiphar's wife lied about him, and then he was thrown in the prison. And then what happens to him in prison? He becomes the best prisoner there, you know. And he rises to the top even in prison. That's a diligent person. It's a diligent man. And so,
I don't know if the Bible says this, but Job probably was. I mean,
yes.
He had such wealth.
Yeah, right. Many Bible characters are very good. And well, obviously, we have good examples right here among us who have been diligent. Yes, right.
Yes. So if you have a lot of Bible examples of retirement. People retiring.
You said we don't have.
Yeah. Do you know of any examples of Moses ever retire?
No, I don't actually. I don't know of any examples.
That's
of
another
that.
Subject. But
no. But it's related though.
There's a lot of studies that doesn't do anybody any good.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah. I know my parents have been retired for a long time, and they among a lot of other people who are retired. They say that they, in some ways, they've been busier since they retired than before they were retired. They're just doing things, other things, you know, not things that they're obligated to do, but things that perhaps they choose to do, but they're still busy. And so, yeah, that's true too. And of course, if you're young, and we've got a number of young people in this audience here, that you know. Developing really good work habits when you're young is so important. You will receive praise and honor from among people, but even if you don't, you will still receive the rewards of hard work, of accomplishment. You feel good about yourself when you accomplish things and when you're diligent. And you don't feel good about yourself when you're a sluggard and when you lay around and you're glued to the bed or glued to the television or glued to any other size screen. I don't recommend it. Don't be glued to anything. You know, be diligent, be active about the things that you do. There are benefits and rewards to it. Well, let's go on to our next proverb here. Turn to chapter 10. And by the way, we will not cover all of the proverbs that relate to being a sluggard. I just chose some of them because there were so many. And this one says, as vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is a sluggard to those who sent him.
What verse was that?
That was 10:26. I believe that's correct. Let's see. Let me look on. Yeah. Or a lazy man. My version, I copied that version, copied it down from a different version. But the New King James Version says, as vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the lazy man to those who sent him. So if we were to translate that to kind of the business owner's perspective, we would say maybe to hire good people. Don't hire people that are going to irritate you because they won't do what you want them to do. You know, without able, competent workers, you know, a business is eventually going to fail. And so that's just a part of a lazy person is irritating to other people. So you don't want to be irritating to other people. It's like smoke in the eyes and vinegar to the teeth. It's not wise to irritate your boss, your employer. You know, it's just not the thing. And as Earl said the other day, there are people who spend so much energy trying to avoid work that if they were to just work to the same degree that they tried to avoid it, being creative in the same way as trying to, you know, avoid work, and they'd probably be successful. So I don't know if there's any employers among us here. Well, there are some employers among us, but that might have comments about that. But I certainly, you know, have noticed in the business that I have been in over time that someone who is lazy just pulls down everybody else. You know, because the lazy person, the sluggard, we among Christian circles tend to talk about good examples of things and how we should follow good examples. But people sometimes follow bad examples. And if someone in a company is setting a bad example, some of those people are going to be following them. And so if everybody is setting a good example, then there's something positive to, you know, to follow. So, let me see. Let's go on to Proverbs 12 and verse 27, just a page or two over here. 12:27. The lazy man does not roast his gain, but the diligent man prizes his possessions. That's from the NIV. And let me read it also from the version that I typically read, which is the New King James. It says, the lazy man does not roast when he took it, what he took in hunting, but diligence is man's precious possession. Maybe this one is a little bit harder to interpret in some ways and in specifics, but the sense of it to me seems to be that the lazy man kind of does the part of the work that's sort of exciting and fun to him. But when it comes to a kind of drudgery of the work or something that's not so fun, then he, like dressing out an animal, for example, that's not so much fun. I've helped in that kind of thing. It's not so much fun to, it might be cool to go out and shoot an animal, you know, or use a bow and arrow, you know, and kill some game. But it's a different thing to dress that game out and, you know, and have do all the necessary things in order to bring it to the table and cook it and eat it. So it almost seems to me like this is saying that the lazy man does not roast his game. It's sort of like he goes out there and shoots something, but he just, I don't want to mess with that. I'll just let it rot in the forest, you know. And so the diligent man, though, prizes his possessions, not to the extent that he makes an idol out of them, but he's a conservator, really. He has a conservator's attitude about it. That is, he conserves God's resources. He's conservative in his attitude towards the things that God has entrusted to them. He doesn't waste away the resources. He takes care of things, whereas the sluggard does not take care of the things that he has. And probably we've all seen this before. God has given human beings dominion over the earth. And this is, again, kind of an expansion of this idea here that we have the authority over the earth, a dominion over the earth, but that dominion carries with it a responsibility for the things that we possess. And the earth is part of that thing in which God has given us some authority over the creatures of the earth and the resources of the earth. So, unfortunately, a sluggard is wasteful. He doesn't care about his possessions in the same way. But a wise and diligent man recognizes what is valuable and takes care of it. When Jean and I were raising our three children, Tristan's here tonight, we taught them that there were three sort of parts to doing any job. Tristan could probably tell you, but I'll tell you what those three parts are. It's preparing to do the job. That is, getting the materials and tools necessary, plans together to do the job. Number two is doing the job and then doing it right, not doing a sloppy job, but doing the job right so someone else or yourself doesn't have to go and do it again because it wasn't done right the first time. So the second part is doing the job right. And the third part is cleaning up after the job, which Earl, I mean, am I telling this right? If you're going to do the job right, that means cleaning up after you do it. Don't leave tools all in the yard. Don't leave this cement bag strolled around and, you know, whatever it is, lumber and everything else. Clean up after the job. So that's the way we taught our children. The lazy man does the very minimum that he can get away with to say he actually did something. He probably didn't prepare well to do it. He might use the wrong tools for the job because he didn't prepare and get the correct tools to do it. He might have gotten second class materials to do the job. And then he didn't clean up after he got it done. I thought Earl might have something to say about
that. He may not have the right tools to do the job because he's been so slothful he hasn't been able to buy the proper tools to do the job. He hasn't had the funds to buy those tools
right.
Because he's been slothful on everything else he's done.
Exactly, right. Yeah. And I was looking at Zachary back there behind you. Zachary is an excellent, excellent craftsman at creating these hammered dulcimers and other musical instruments. But I guarantee you, if Zachary didn't do the quality of work that he does, they couldn't sell his hammered dulcimers at the high price, you know, that they sell them at, because his customers, his and Jerry's customers, are expecting to get the best. Is that right, Zachary? So they're expecting to get the best, and if they don't give excellent, excellent work, then the customer is going to be dissatisfied and he's going to get a bad name out there. And you don't want a bad name. Unfortunately, this is kind of, this is for free. But this again kind of comes into another realm that I'm aware of. And that is that secular sort of leftist politically in our country have owned the narrative for decades now regarding the use of the earth and how to think about it. And there, the earth and its resources, as in a Christian idea, we believe in a proper conservationist attitude towards the earth and its resources. We don't want dirty air. We don't want dirty water. And sometimes the picture is painted as though, you know, Christian people who believe that God is the creator of the earth want to dominate it and just extract whatever materials out of it for their own enjoyment and don't care about the future of humanity. That's not true. And that's certainly not my perspective, and I'm sure it's not yours. But we don't make an idol out of the earth as though the earth is the most valuable thing in the universe. It's not the earth. So it's not Mother Earth that we're concerned about. It's not Mother Earth that needs to be saved. It's human beings that live on the habitation of planet Earth that ultimately needs God's saving. We don't have to save the planet. We need to save human beings that live on the planet. So there's just a difference in perspective and attitude. But I think that this proverb has something to say about that. Let's go now to Proverbs. We'll skip over some chapters and go to Proverbs 22 and verse 13. 22:13. This one is one that's always kind of struck me as funny. Like certain things, God does have a sense of humor. And the lazy man says, "There's a lion outside. I shall be slain in the streets." So this is kind of like the person who's always making an excuse about why they can't go out and do what they should do. There's a lion in the street. Therefore, I can't go out and work, you know. There's fast cars out there in the street. Therefore, I can't go out and work. There's a virus about, so therefore I can't go out and work. I don't like my boss, so therefore I can't go to work. They're not paying me enough, so therefore I'm not going to go out to work. There's a zillion different reasons for people, excuses that people can make when they don't want to go to work. And people make all kinds of excuses. So that again is just it is almost a funny way of seeing this idea. There's a lion in the street. There's always something. There's some danger out there. There's some risk out there that I can't take in order to go do my job, you know. And a lion in the street. There could have been lions in the street, of course, in that time, in that region. So it may have been a real thing at some times. There's sometimes a bears in our street. But that doesn't prevent us from coming to worship service. You know, there's other things that we could use as excuses not to do things that we know we ought to do. So work is not something to dread, not something to fear. We should all want to develop an occupation for ourselves that we can find fulfillment in and is productive for us and other people. And I realize that not everybody has a job that they just love. I recognize that. This reminds me of a gentleman across the street here that I had a Bible study with some years ago. He died. He's dead now. But we had a Bible study that was going on for a number of weeks. And at some point, he didn't really know me all that well, other than just I was a member here, and I had gone across the street to talk to him, and we eventually set up a Bible study. And at some point during our sitting down at the kitchen table, he said, "Well, Les, what do you do?" And I said, "Well, if you can believe anybody makes a living doing this, I'm a designer. I design stained glass windows, and I'm an artist." And he said, "Oh," he said, "you got a clean job." I said, "Yeah, I guess that's true. I have a clean job." And that was pretty impressive to him. I don't think he had a clean job. I don't remember what it was he did. But, you know, I haven't always had a clean job. In fact, back in my youth, I worked in tobacco for 4.5 years, and it was a dirty job. Has anybody else here worked in crop tobacco? Frank? Tom? Well, you know what tobacco gum is then, right? This backer gum, that's what we called back in those days, backer gum, when you crop in backer tobacco, for those of you not in the South, I think everybody is, backer gum is black. It gets all over your hands and your arms when you're cropping tobacco plants, and it's dirty, and it's hard to get off, like grease is hard to get off. You have to scrub it long and hard to get it off. So it was a dirty job. And you go out there in the morning. This was in my teen, actually started when I was 12 years old, walking behind the harvester, picking up the leaves that the croppers dropped, and then giving it to them at the end of the rows, and they would string it, you know, and all of that. This was down east, close to in Pikeville, north of Goldsboro, North Carolina. So eventually I was promoted to a cropper, and I cropped most of those 4 years. I did some hanging in the barn, various other things that related to tobacco work. But it was hard work. And you, at the end of the day, you're just bone tired. You're so tired it goes down to your bones. And you're freezing in the morning because these big tobacco leaves will slap you in the face. And you get wet all over, and it's cool in the morning. And then in the afternoon, you burn up. And so there might be 2 hours out of the day that you're actually comfortable. So the best thing about that job, or at least one of the good things about that job, was getting off, you know, at 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock, whenever it was, got off. So, but, having said all of that, I learned a lot from doing that kind of hard work. And my dad always had a saying related to sluggards, you know, people that weren't or just weren't wise, or just acting foolish, and various other, he said they need to spend some time in the backer field because they, you know, they didn't have enough experience to know that what they had, they were spoiled. They didn't have enough experience in life to know that what they had was good, and they should appreciate it and be grateful for it and be thankful for it. Well, when you've been in the backer field for 4.5 years, you really appreciate being a stained glass designer, you know, because I've got something to compare it to. And I think young people need to get to work early rather than late. I think it's helpful to learn these kinds of experiences early. It helps you through your life to know what work is about. And, you know, the people that built this country worked hard. Think about, we were in Cataloochee yesterday, and Gene and I were talking about how difficult it would have been back in the days when there were barely roads over those mountains to live in that community and basically draw all the resources that for your entire sustenance from that little valley in there. That would have been, these were pioneer type people, and they had to work hard just to live, just to make it from 1 year to the next, and a lot of them didn't. A lot of them died. So we are just we're so spoiled in this country in so many ways. Earl G.
A lot of people who are sluggards because they've been subsidized by someone. They're either being subsidized by the government, or they've got a parent that subsidizes them, or an aunt or uncle that subsidizes them, and allows them to be a slugger.
Right. Enabling is another word that comes up.
Enabling them to do that. Yeah. And people who enable those people are doing them a great disservice.
Right. Yes, that's true. You know, again, sort of back to the Backer field, my brothers and I who worked for those years, it was common for boys in that community in Pikeville to do that. So I can't really claim that I initiated this. My father knew the farmers in the area and got us boys all jobs. But, you know, we thought we were rich. Because at the end of the week, either Roscoe Edmondson, who was the first employer that I had, or Chester Hare, who was the second guy, they would come around with this box of cash, you know, and when you're 12 years old and you don't have hardly anything, you know, they start, you know, this is how many hours you work this many hours this week, and he just takes this box, you know, all this folding money out and starts giving it to you. That's a big thing. That's a big thing to a 12-year-old. And all of a sudden, whoa, I can buy a 10-speed bicycle. I can buy a camera. I can buy a BB gun. And we bought all those things and more from our tobacco money, you know. So, yeah, that's...
You're fortunate. You got nothing. I got nothing.
You got nothing. Okay. So Frank worked in tobacco for free. For Dad. Okay, gotcha. Well, our time is running out so fast. Well, that's good. I'm glad you will. That's good that you always get some. Well, and our parents didn't pay us to do things around the house either. But this was, you know, this was a job. So let me see. Where was I here? Let's go to Proverbs 24. We'll see if we can get this one in before the bell rings. The time has gone so fast here. But I appreciate all your comments. I think this is valuable, you know, to talk about this kind of thing, because it's not an everyday subject with us as we gather together to study the Bible. But there's so much in Proverbs that relates to living practical existence here on earth, you know, and being successful. And if anybody knows how to do that, Solomon does. So Proverbs 24, verses 30 to 34, that's where we're going to read, 30 to 34. I went by the field of the lazy man, and by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding. And there it was, all overgrown with thorns. Its surface was covered with nettles. Its stone wall was broken down. When I saw it, I considered it well. I looked on it and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. So shall your poverty come like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. So here's a picture of a vineyard that has just gone to pot. And it's not producing. It's grown up with thorns. Its wall is broken down. And, you know, we had a really good garden this year, Gene and I. We don't always have a good garden because sometimes we're busy with other things, or we don't take time to take care of it. But I can tell you why we had a good garden this year. It's because, I mean, Gina did some of this as well, but I had the larger portion of the garden, so I'll talk about what I did. But the main reason we had a good garden this year is because I kept it weeded, I kept bugs smashed, and I harvested it often. And Gina lost count of the quarts of beans that she canned. We ate them fresh. I would have had more if a groundhog had not eaten up half of my rows. We had corn, fresh corn. We froze corn, had plenty of tomatoes, had lima beans, just all the zucchini, squash, regular yellow squash. We had all those things this year and more because, and Gina kept part of hers, but as I say, most of it I was taking care of. But because I kept on top of it, we had a good garden. If you don't keep on top of it, you won't have a good garden. But it's not about gardening. You can have a good marriage if you stay on top of it. Keep the weeds pulled out of it. Keep your wall around it. You can have a good job if you keep the weeds pulled and you keep a wall around it. You can have a good country if you keep the weeds pulled out of it and you keep the wall around it. And so many other applications of this basic agricultural principle. Don't lick your grapevines. By the way, I do have grapevines that are overgrown. So that's not, I won't talk about those. Okay. So I concentrated on my garden and not my grapevines. But you've been a great audience for it. Thank you for making this class such a good class.